Strategic Christian Services is pleased to present the Love Series. This is the workshop entitled Loving Your Children by Jan Peacock.
The Apostle John, at the very end of his life, boiled the gospel down to, you know, if you love one another, it's enough as far as what the church's call was, because the end of that, the fruit of that, has such a tremendous variety it can come out in. God obviously loves variety. If we look around this room at one another, he has a lot of choice as to how he has made people, and he has enjoyed making a variety. And I was thinking when she was saying about being a peacock anymore, well, the truth is, from a bloodline point of view, Catherine will always be much more of a peacock than I am, because I don't have 1 ounce of peacock blood in me. And that whole way that God has made the families go, that's how, you know, we keep inserting new things into the mix, which makes it very healthy. For the women in the congregation, it's just like working with color. I know that some of you men work with color too, but women tend to have more opportunity since we have the social mandate at times to paint our faces. I know in some African tribes, it's the men that paint their faces, but in Western civilization, it's the women who paint their faces. And as you work with the color and you blend in the different amounts and make it a stronger or a subtler tint or that, and each color has its place where it is the best choice. So it's wonderful to see how we do mix together in the spirit and in the natural, which of course God also created. And as we talk about children in particular, I think it's very important that we remember that we are tripartite beings, that we are body, soul, and spirit. And each one is a part that God loves, that he created, that Jesus came to save us, body, soul, and spirit. So when we're working with our children, each of these areas is very important for us to acknowledge and be aware of, and each affects the other. But the most significant aspect of the human being is the spirit. That is what separates us from the rest of creation. And it's the spirit that has been given to be the governor of us. That's the part of our being that is supposed to be in charge of the soul and the body's choices. So that when we're loving our children, if you'll accept my definition for the purpose of parenting, that loving our child is doing everything we can to allow that child to become all, to encourage and train them up in the way they should go, to be all that God has created them to be, then what we need to do is to recognize that spirit and train that spirit in particular. Because the Holy Spirit, as I know many of you, because I know many of you in the room, you have children, and you know very well that even very small children have strong spiritual experiences. And our ability to acknowledge and honor those, not to trivialize them, to encourage them, will make our children aware of their spirits at an early age. And I really think that that is the key to having a successful parentage, is allowing your children. And I am going to be talking to the perfect situation. I know that very few people have it. The younger couples that are in the Lord and are working towards this, you have such a unique opportunity in this society. But any other variation from two loving, saved parents is going to have its own unique challenges. And unless we're going to divide us up into a whole bunch of little groups, I'm just going to assume a participating mother and a participating father. And if that is not the case, then you are going to have to go to the Holy Spirit and find out, you know, how you will work on that. I'm sort of assuming most of you, if you came, already read the several paragraphs that I sort of wrote at the beginning of my outline. Is that the case? I'm nodding heads. So I don't think I'll go over that again, other than to read Proverbs 20:11. This was one that never had stood out to me until I had a teacher bring it to my attention in reference to one of my children. Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right. And that is, of course, the reputation that is most significant that we want. We want it to be pure and right, meaning a just or a righteous application in life there. So developing character to me is the primary issue. God has formed the spirit, but the character is the way we are known in society. That's what that Proverbs is referencing. It's referencing the child's character. And character is sort of the interaction between the child's spirit and the physical world, if I can put it that way. The two breakdowns I have in our outline for today is love is a relational term and love is an action word. And Dennis has covered quite a bit already, so I'll be able to assume that. The first thing I think I've already made pretty clear, that we must love and respect our children as the spiritual creation they are. We have to see them not as a possession in any way, but just as a responsibility that God has given us. The first thing we have to teach our children is that it's not just me. The child needs to know that the world extends beyond them and their needs. Now, when you think about this, this is a really pretty major trauma. It birthed the child now with our advanced birthing techniques, getting back to the basics of how things maybe were done in the past even. The child is, you know, put right on the mother's stomach, and there's a real emphasis to bond the child and not feel the separation, birth anxiety, and all the, you know, big words that we can use. But I think all of us know that children, especially in the first couple of months, are pretty unaware that they are a different being than the mother. And I didn't anticipate quite as many gentlemen to be in here, but at least from a mother's point of view, if you're a nursing mother, I think the first time the child understands is when the teeth come in and they bite. This is when one has to start, or usually we choose to start, making it clear to the child that you are a separate entity from them and the biting is causing pain on your part. And then it moves out from there. We get into, you know, that they just have to wait, that their needs are not the automatically fulfilled needs that originally the autonomic nervous system while they were in the womb, you know, took care of. And so the child is going through a lot of growth of understanding in that first year. And, you know, we can sort of laugh about it, but if you think about it, they have no way conceptually to think. The only way they can get what they want is to cry. They have no other option. They have no other understanding. And so our first year with the children and loving them is very much in meeting their needs and learning to die to our own needs, which is our opportunity as parents to grow, which I know we all have great opportunity with little kids to grow. So you work towards that. They can learn about scheduling and, you know, cause and effect, but they don't have the capacity for much more than that. But you know that they turn and they look at daddy's voice. They'll turn to daddy's voice even from when they've been in the womb. First time I've been in the delivery of all my grandchildren, and they almost always, the first time the father says something, their head turns to that voice because they know that voice. So both parents have a lot to contribute to the security of the child to begin with. But as they grow up, they have to, you know, learn to extend beyond their parents. There's the toddler learning how to share, which is another major trauma in life for most children, to consider somebody else. And then over time, you have to put them into increased responsibilities of family chores, being hospitable to guests, how you relate to the people in the church, how you relate to the world at large. And they have an expanding capacity to relate and to give and to be able to consider others. And that consideration of others is, of course, the foundation of love, because love is primarily, it's giving and receiving, but it's initially the giving that is the most important thing that we put in a child. And so they have to have an awareness beyond themselves. Self-awareness left itself is going to be just that, self. And they'll never grow and mature beyond it. And so even though these things seem like small steps, they really are steps of spiritual growth. And you need to perceive them that way and put them out that way to your children. After all, love really is the most sought-after form of human fulfillment. And if we don't approach it in the right way, we find children that go out and look for it in all the wrong ways. That's why it's very important that we extend to them and teach them how to properly extend to others. Glue is what holds the family together, and the family is what holds society together as a whole. We're told in Genesis 12:3 that it's through the family that God intends to bless the world. So if we leave our child to self-development, and we do not get involved in training them up. It's very much like urban sprawl. When you look at any individual aspect of, say, Los Angeles, there's nothing particular wrong with any particular thing, but the net effect, having just happened totally haphazardly, is not aesthetically very pleasing. And if we leave our child to a very haphazard kind of development, it's not going to have a pleasing effect either. One of the first things that you can do with your child is really teaching them how to respond to others. And I think if you do this early, it's good. Children are usually curious about other people, and teaching them to make eye contact when they're spoken to. You do this initially, of course, when you are training them, look at me, I said, you know, I've set this standard. Make sure that they hear you when you give them directions, when you set down rules or obligations for them. But the eye contact is very important. You know, you can always tell when a child is choosing not to receive, you know, you say, pick up the toy or whatever it is, because they will, like if they don't make eye contact with you, they didn't hear you and they're not responsible. Eye contact, children, there's an intuitive understanding that eye contact brings a degree of obligation. And it's important for children to be able to make eye contact when someone says hello to them. They need to learn to consider the other person's feelings also. They verbal replies if they're shy, that may be more difficult, but they can make eye contact and they can make a pleasant smile or even little things like that do establish them participating in society and having consideration for other people. But everything like that pretty much has to be trained in most children. That is one advantage I've seen quite a lot in homeschool children, is that they're able to relate to adults and not just other children. And they are much more readily engaging with people over a broader space of things. And I think it's because they have more opportunity than children in regular school settings. There are, and even in most church settings, they're always being segregated according to their age, and they don't learn how to relate beyond that. And so if you have a child in a what I'd call an age-segregated situation a lot, you need to emphasize when you do have opportunity their ability to relate beyond that. It's very important to have relationships with people, I think, in varying age groups. All my children tried for someone in between Dennis and my age and their age for mentors at different points. And grandparents, I think, are very important. Not to sound self-serving in that, but it really is. It broadens the child for sure. And it also can be helpful to your children, too, because you can give them a little relief at times from what seems like a 24/7 job. I call it the tragedy of fear, because I know a lot of children have a degree of fear. But you have to realize God has not given us a spirit of fear. Fear is a defensive posture, and God has really intended His children to be on the offense. So the more you can encourage and build up your children so that they do not have fearfulness, it's one thing to be cautious in an appropriate way, but I think you all know what I mean by fearfulness. Fearfulness to try new things, fearfulness to be with new people, fearfulness to go new places. You need to encourage them to see opportunity in what is new and to see opportunity in variety. One thing I really enjoy is food. You know, my husband at times will tell me my God is my belly. I love the variety. It's one of the reasons I'm very grateful that we have been able to travel a lot. I always like to see what the new food is in the places that we go. And so I always find it really sad, since God made us body, soul, and spirit, and we eat every day. You know, when I find a child that will only eat peanut butter sandwiches, hamburgers, and french fries, I think, well, all of those taste good and I enjoy them all, but how boring, you know, over and over again. And so I think it's good to expose our children to a lot of things. The old Girl Scout rule, which I'm sure isn't there anymore, but it used to be 3 bites. You don't have to eat more than that, but 3 bites. Because over time you would develop a taste if you, you know, if you didn't have it. And we don't always, you know, want to learn to like something new. But so many of the things that I actually like best now, I didn't particularly care for to begin with. But because I was trained to eat what was set before me and always try something new, I now have the pleasure of an acquired taste. So, and I know that sounds sort of trivial, you know, and people say, well, you might as well enjoy it and da-da-da-da-da. But I think we can learn in almost every aspect of our life. And if we always keep ourselves in some tight little comfortable box, God doesn't have any place to stretch us and grow us. And all of these little ways that you teach your child to be courageous, so to speak, when he gets a big opportunity, it will have already started putting a foundation in their character. I don't want my children to have negative experiences in order to develop good character qualities. And that so often happens. I know those of us that had a very worldly background, a lot of what we learned was negative experiences. Now, we don't want our children to go through that, but we need to see ways that we can use positive experiences to build their character, so that whatever negative experiences they may go through in life will be for the Lord's sake and not in order to refine their own character. Not that they'll ever be sinless or anything else, but I'm sure we would all agree that you can do an awful lot to spare your children pain by simply training them up and providing them a healthy environment. But you also need to provide them with a stimulating environment so that they can really have all the opportunities they need. When I see all the energy that our society puts into sports, for instance, if they would put a tenth of that energy into developing their children's character, the children would be so much happier. So often, you know, parents will tell me they don't have time to do SLT, for instance. And I find that just incredible, because the same parents will have done soccer for 5 years, taking them to two or three, you know, events every week, putting in 6 or 7 hours of their own time, and yet in their mind, it's if the child misses this soccer opportunity, that would be some kind of tragedy. But somehow the character is just going to happen. And I personally believe that my athletic abilities are going to be significantly expanded when I get my resurrection body. And at that point, I will probably enjoy sports a lot more than I do now. And I do enjoy them now, but I have a feeling that we'll have a lot of different sports things, and they will be more keyed to our creativity than to no pain, no gain at that point. So anyway, that's my little plug for, yes, it takes time, but in the long run, you're giving your child so much more by putting in that time. We need to develop our discernment and their discernment so that they have eyes to see what's spiritual. And we want to be careful that we don't just respond to their souls. I think that we've already come across that. Colossians 3:21 is a commonly used scripture for us as parents. And I think it's a good one to remember. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. And we do need to encourage, not discourage. But we also need to enlighten our children and help them see. Our kids saw a lot of things on TV and movies and whatnot, which I wish that there had been better entertainment available or we had come across it. But even so, it was redeemed very much by the fact that we discussed it. And most movies do show the negative consequences of sin on some level, even if it's unwittingly on their part. And it's important to teach them to discern, to talk through situations that they're in that are negative. What made them negative? What were the spiritual problems that made this negative? Now, how can we redeem this? How, for you, can this become something positive? It's sort of like composting, you know? It smells really, really bad, but you can put it on the garden and later the good seed can come up. So when things happen in their life that are negative or they're exposed to things that maybe you preferred they hadn't been, again, you can use these as opportunities to give them God's perspective on it. Because God really does have a very broad perspective. As I always think about when I drive, it's very important to have good peripheral vision. You know, they tell you to look in the rearview mirror every 15 seconds and check both sides, but don't forget to always be looking straight ahead. And a lot of life is that way, too. We discern by not looking at the really obvious always, but being aware of the whole situation around things. So circumstances are our opportunity. We can always teach our children to redeem adversity. And in looking at circumstances, something that has been very fruitful for me that I always want to bring up is what I've called themes. You want to teach your child to grow as a person, but let's face it, that takes a lot of energy. And especially if you have several children, sometimes it's very difficult to keep on top of each child all the time. And so what I always tried to do once my children were at a cognitive age of, as soon as they could grasp the term, if something kept on happening in a certain area of their life, I called it the theme. This is what God is working on. And even for a toddler, God is working on learning how to share. And you can talk to them about it. And when a circumstance come up, you can say, well, how did you do? Did you win the game? Kids always like to win the game. And if they're put into a situation where they have to share, it's did you win or lose? Were you able to share, or did your soul come up there and, try to take control over your spirit's governance there? But as they get older in particular, the themes become more and more clear. And I think each one of us, when we say to each other, well, what's God working on in you at the moment? What we're really saying is, what's the theme God has for your life now? And He usually doesn't expect more than one thing at a time from any of us. He may go at it from a lot of different angles, but what we need to discern is, what's the root situation He's after? And teaching our children to think that way about their life from the beginning, that instills the habit of growth, which hopefully you're also modeling to them, and you can talk it through. So that is something I've always really done with my kids. It gave us something that we could pray together about, watch for. It was a point of encouragement, because you want to be encouraging your children about spiritual things and not just natural things. Every child has a different mix of possibilities and potentials, and I think keeping them aware of the spiritual dimension is so very important. Another way of developing character is the wax on, wax off. Dennis talks about the Karate Kid so often. I think most of you have probably heard him use that at some time. And especially if you have several children, I think it's a very efficient way to handle growth for your situations. Using chores and responsibilities is very necessary and a very prudent way to organize things. If your child is too busy to do chores, your child is too busy with entertainment, in my opinion. Because chores, works, contributing to the family's responsibility as a whole are just a foundational part of character. It's pulling your own weight in the situation. So it's a good way to leverage spiritual training with natural need if you're a parent. And also, when they get married, their spouses will thank you, whichever sex they are. Because usually in any marriage, one is super that way and the other isn't. And it varies which is which between the male and the female. So it's, even if you don't have a child who's naturally prone towards those kinds of responsibilities, they need to obviously learn them to function in life. And this, of course, all keeps us spiritually minded also. We have a big, big God. And then I was going to tell a bit of a story on Catherine. Catherine was our adventuresome child, and being the baby in the family, everybody, she's cute, and da-da-da-da-da, and she was so dramatic. We all, just enjoyed the whole thing. And a couple times I think, I know it's my last child, and I bet I'm spoiling her compared with the last two. And, she's so dramatic and entertaining and everything. But poor girl, in a certain way, when she hit her 18-year-old, when you're supposed to be out on your own, that's when God put her two big heavies on her life, one after another. The first was, her father said, I don't think she's totally socially, she's the evangelist in the family, so people are everything, right? So she keeps, relationships around the world constantly stirred up. So what's her dad say? I don't think you should go through to school. You should take at least a semester, maybe a year off before you go ahead for school. That was totally crucifying to her soul. But her spirit said, I know that my father has been given to me to give me guidance, and he feels so strongly about it. And so she did it. And then she had the testimony afterward of the obedience. But I don't think she would have done it if she had not had a history of working through different circumstances with us, if she hadn't been taught to look and see how other people that took their parents' advice prospered, and those that chose to go their own way against their parents' advice usually had problems. Even unbelieving parents, because they love their children. I just think God gives us insight that isn't even ours. It's just like filtered through the Holy Spirit out our mouth. And I think that happens a lot of times even with unbelieving parents. So she had history to accept her parents' thing. And then when she fell in love with this young man who was a infant Christian, and her dad said, yes, it very well may be the man for you, but you're on the 5-year plan. Now, how many 19-year-olds would be interested in the 5-year plan that you know? And it turned out it wasn't a law that it was going to be 5 years, but that probably, looking at different circumstances, that it probably would be 5 years. And sure enough, it would have been 5 years probably to the day, except for travel schedules. And she wanted to have certain people for sure at her wedding. So what was it, 5 years and 3 months?
Yeah. 5 years and 2 months.
Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and they were good years, but they, you know, they did have their challenges, but... yeah. Yeah, well, she challenged him, he challenged her, we challenged them, God challenged them. But they still are like newlyweds as far as I can see. So it was for the best. And I would have told a few individual stories, but since they're both here and I didn't clear it in advance, you're going to not have as interesting of a story time on that one as you might have had. But anyway, fear does restrict us. Fear does restrict us, and when we are not fearful, God has not given us a spirit of fear for many reasons. I mean, if you're fearful, you're going to lose the love of your life, then you don't necessarily hear God saying, just wait it out. You don't hear God saying, okay, he's right, he needs to go away for 6 months without any communication so that you guys can both really hear God and, you know, have a chance to really grow without the emotions interacting there. Because we know very much that Chad, we could tell what kind of man he was, and he wanted to be the head of his family. And if he got married being, you know, 6 months in the Lord and she'd been raised in the Lord, that would not have given them an easy time in establishing that. So he was a wise man who went and got himself trained in the Lord. So that was very good. And another thing, a little pitch for getting involved in a local church if you aren't. We know Christ through other people because Christ is shown a little bit here and a little bit there. I remember early, when I was maybe saved 2 years, I read an article by, I think it was Judson Cornwall. It was about his brother who had had a ministry to what at that point we called retarded children. And he said for his opening line, mentally retarded does not mean spiritually retarded. Everyone has a spiritual dimension. And it's so necessary to have a variety of exposure if we really want to see the completeness of Christ and not just be limited to... Our natural tendency is to have friends like us with the same interests. I mean, one of the big advantages of the church is we're forced to relate to people that don't have the same taste and the same interests, the same economic status, in the same racial background, or, you know, whatever it is that you would segregate yourself according to. So it is just important not to forsake the fellowshipping together. And I think every Christian should expand, I think, with the kind of opportunities we have in this country to go to conferences that are of Christian orientation in an area that God is directing you to develop or to be used. All this kind of thing, it's so important. And if you don't do it and if you don't expose your children to it, then they're going to have to learn later or learn the hard way. So it's a very, very good thing for you to do. Another thing about the variety of people is the variety of positive qualities and character attributes he's given us. And this was something I was aware of very early, and it helped me so much with my children. And I believe I got this list from Bill Gothard, but I cannot remember for sure. But what it has a list of the positive qualities and what he calls the misused positive qualities. And so if you take something like courage that you want your children to have, it has listed, you know, brazen, reckless, abandoned, you know, brash, incautious. That's like the warped manifestation of courage. But what helps if when you see some kind of a flaw in your child's character or an underdeveloped attribute or a twisted in the development attribute. It was just so good to look at it. And sometimes it's just an immatureness in the attribute. In other words, like my daughter Rachel, she was always very alert. She was very alert. And the misused or the negative traits he wrote down here were curious, noisy, jumpy, inquisitive. Well, to me, I wouldn't even put curious or inquisitive. I wouldn't necessarily see those as negative at all. I think what he meant here was for those to be more not a fully matured manifestation of the alertness. But if we're going to be discerning, we have to have a certain measure of curiousness, but that curiousness just has to be matured in its application. Discretion can sometimes make you overly cautious or secretive or timid, but once it's rounded out, discretion is certainly of great value in so much of our life. Creativity, we all know that creative children tend to be daydreamers or somewhat mischievous or maybe a little crafty, but all of these are the, you know, he put in here also cunning. But if I saw something that I didn't like, I pulled out this list and I said, okay, this doesn't look good, but what is it? You know, it helped me see, aha, you're right. That is like a seed that can be developed into this positive attribute. And left immature, it's like so many things that some things that are so cute in a toddler by 5 years old, they are so obnoxious. So you do not want to leave them. You do not want to laugh and encourage the child's mischievousness as a little guy, and then all of a sudden one day he wakes up and he's getting disciplined for something that he was always really encouraged in the past because you laughed and, oh, how cute that is when they were younger. So it's good to know what your end goal is when you respond to your children and look at it that way. Love is an action word. I want to read John 14:15 before we start this section. If you love me, keep my commandments. It couldn't be any more direct that love is connected to action. And I think that is also why he tells it, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Because since God is love, the more we reflect love, the more we are reflecting the godly image that we're made in, because we're made in the image of God. So we're made in a godly image. God is love. So as we reflect love, we are more and more showing that we are God's child. And if we love him, if we're going to reflect love, we are going to do what he wants us to do, right? Because it's going to become more and more our nature. His nature, which is love, is going to become our nature, which will be to also love. And that, therefore, increasing godliness. And if you want a scripture on that, it's John 13:34-35. The next thing I want to talk about, because it is one of the big criticisms and big controversies within Christianity, is the purpose of a greenhouse. I do believe in a greenhouse, but not in the way that it's commonly practiced or spoken of, or to the extent in years that people will talk about it. The purpose of a greenhouse is in order to strengthen the new plants. And if you get a greenhouse raised plant and you put it out and you transplant it at the proper time, it is actually stronger than a plant that was put out as a seedling earlier in the spring and had to fight the elements along the way, because a lot of its strength went to that negative fight. Whereas in the greenhouse, the plant can concentrate on just its positive growth. It's not resisting frost. It's not resisting wind. When it's transplanted, it's to a point of strength where it has the natural amount of strength that it's able to contend with the elements, rather than having those elements take a lot of its lifeblood. So if we look at our home and family as a greenhouse for the purpose of growing an adult, not protecting a child, but to grow an adult, I think that is going to help a lot. And we need to be aware, as we're dealing with our kids, that our ability usually precede our discernment. I think all of us are aware with little toddlers, when they start talking, like my granddaughter at 18 months, you know, at 15 months she really wasn't talking, but you knew she knew a lot. Well, by 18 months, it's amazing what they know, you know, and they're telling you that. So their abilities always precede their discernment. They will be able to do things that they don't have the discernment really to do well. So it's our part to discern what their abilities are, and then to teach them to properly use those abilities and develop their own discernment. There's a developmental order that children have. The first couple of years of school, there's one system that calls it the polyparrot age, because they are just totally able to memorize everything. That's why that's the prime time to teach a child a new language. Or the multiplication tables, the ABCs, phonics, you know, anything that is a memory work, a small child can actually memorize quicker than an adult, because that's just what their brain is up to. They're usually close to pre-adolescent, you know, the 11, 12-year-olds, some of them at 10-year-olds, before they're really able to reason in an inductive, deductive way. They may be able to memorize things. You may be able to show them cause and effect in order that way that they can perceive, but they cannot really analyze and do that on their own, the same way that they cannot tie their shoe when they're 18 months old. They simply have not had the mental connections made in their mind that allow that type of behavior. And I know I've got some teachers here, and especially you early childhood teacher, know that, you know, some of them do it a few months different, but there's certain things that they're not going to be able to do till they're a certain age, and some of them later yet. And being aware of that with your child and developing the things that they can do well at that age is very helpful. Not, you know, trying to teach them philosophy when they're 6 years old. That's not the thing. You can teach them the vocabulary, but they're not going to really understand the concepts. So it's very good to have a greenhouse in the sense of you can really concentrate on the things that they can do well. You can develop manners and a spirit of gratitude, I think, in the family environment very well. And I look at manners as really being an outward and natural sign of what should be an inward and spiritual truth for our children. Because manners is all around considering others ahead of yourself and being giving, having a servant spirit towards others, all the little things that we have sort of dropped as a culture were connected to that. Opening doors for the ladies. Now, to begin, I know a lot of women think that was just so stupid, but it was initially to show respect for women in public because they didn't really have a public presence in Western civilization. We're really talking about European Western civilization from about, 1750 to 1950, when we talk about a lot of these manners things. And a lot of women were in a home situation. And in the past, men and women had worked together in almost all their work. If you think about an agrarian society, there wasn't gender differentiation in that kind of way. It was the men were stronger, so they did the heavier work. And the women had the babies, so they nursed them. And there was a division of labor really based on the physical needs of the environment. But when they started having separate lives because of men going away to work, there were just different ways that, as the weaker vessel honoring their wife, they served them in public situations in order to show a respect for them. In a Christian society where both men and, you know, the Bible makes very clear that men are supposed to dwell with their wives according to knowledge. And this was one way they were trying to acknowledge, anyway, their women. But when people come into your home and you take their coat and you show them where things are and you do what you can to make them comfortable, that is a chance you have to teach your children to extend. But, of course, if you're not hospitable in the first place, your children won't have that opportunity. So if your parents didn't practice hospitality, you're going to have to learn in order to give your children that advantage of having that environment in order to minister and to extend for other people. I think manners are very, very important because they also show gratitude. When you say thank you, you acknowledge people's efforts on your part. And a grateful spirit is something that the Bible thinks a lot of, that we have and acknowledge in one another. So I'd encourage you to use your home environment to develop those skills. Hebrews 12:12-13 tells us that we can be formed, strengthened, healed. Having this kind of protected environment just really gives you an advantage when dealing with your child. It may be necessary for some families, but I do not personally feel that putting children with a bunch of other children that are unformed and think that this is a good way for them to develop socially, I don't think that it necessarily works out all that well from what I've seen. I think it's important that they be put in situations where your values and your standards are going to be expected of your child.
And the importance of encouragement. There's no way to underestimate the importance of encouragement. I have a sheet here which I copied out of, I don't know where, you know, it's one of those, the top didn't come out, but apparently I did it in 1993 because it has a calendar from January 1993 on the back. We recycle. Anyway, I would like to read this one paragraph because I think it just says a lot. The fact that some of us are created with faster brains, stronger bodies, or a more beautiful appearance does not change God's estimation of our worth to Him or our worth to the world. The Apostle Paul said, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Our strength or our worth is not in our brains, our body, or our appearance. As the psalmist David states, our strength comes from the Lord. When we praise children or encourage children, our purpose should be to inspire them to strive toward the mark, quoting Philippians 3:14 there, or the level of excellence God has uniquely designed for them. When children realize that their strength, their worth, and usefulness is in the Lord, this gives them freedom and confidence to achieve beyond themselves, thus strengthening their hope and their faith in the future. And it is just so important that each child has that understanding that they have a purpose. God has made them and equipped them for what He has for them to do. And nobody has anything that God hasn't given them. So I think that's one reason why pride is such a heinous sin, because, you know, why do you have any pride? Because there's nothing about it that you did. You know, anything that's good is coming out of what God has given us and shown us. So it's very important that we encourage our children for how they respond to God and how they use what God has given them, rather than them finding their self-worth in things that aren't reflective of what they have contributed to the situation, if you know what I mean. So what we want to do with our children is teach them wisdom. And wisdom has another definition. It can also be called skill. It's what makes knowledge useful, according to Proverbs 1:1-5. And we do not want to cut off a lesson short because of what we do. And I have an example here from Adam. He was always a very responsible child. You know, he had a feeling of God's call on him early on. And he always really loved athletics. And we had a 50 by 40 foot lot. And our backyard was, I think it was 14 and a half feet deep. And we managed to have several things in the 40 by 14 and a half feet. But wasn't really enough room to practice a lot of things that Adam would have liked to have done. And what he was doing was practicing batting, you know, and his dad said, "Be careful, Adam, because of that window." Well, of course, he did manage to break the window. And that, of course, was obviously his responsibility, not ours. And being at that point 11 years old, $20 was an awful lot of money. But there was no way that Dennis and I could provide the $20 for him and have it be to his advantage for us to do it. And he knew that, you know, he knew that from the time it broke. So within 2 days, he had a plan for, you know, what he was going to be able to get that money, and came to us and was going to take a considerable amount of time. So we were definitely going to fix the window, but the money would be coming in from Adam overtime. And he'd made that commitment in his heart. So that was one wonderful lesson learned. But that very afternoon, after that was all resolved, God had another big lesson for him, because we went shopping at Petrini's Market. And as we were walking through the parking lot, there was a $20 bill that Adam saw and picked up. So there was another, looked like a great provision from God possibility there, but obviously you have to go in the store and say, "Did anybody report losing a $20 bill?" And then they wait 48 hours to let you know. So there is another chance not to let your own need overcome your honesty, because honesty is something you want in your character. So he had to wait the 48 hours, and then they called and said no one had called in. So then he was able to experience the provision of the Lord. So that one opportunity that we could have shortcutted taught him personal responsibility, reinforced his honesty, because it was certainly a point of temptation to make an exception. After all, it was just laying on the ground, right? And faith in God's provision. But had we cut in on that, at any point along there, he would have lost the fullness. And that's sort of what I'm saying, that we can have some very big character lessons for our children, that don't have to cost them a tremendous amount of pain. If we keep our eyes open and if we don't shortcut what God is doing out of, you know, misplaced mercy, I guess you could say, because we do that a lot. And a lot of times it's also because it's easier for us to keep care of it than have them have to deal with it. But that's the learning opportunities, and learning those character things are much more important than a lot of the other things that we would put time out for them. I know that members of my family more than once arrived at church not particularly looking like they should have, because we weren't going to be late. Justice was going to be meted out, if we put it that way. Or, you know, some need had come up, and so we weren't really dressed well, or our hair wasn't done well, or whatnot. But on the other hand, God also says, don't forsake the fellowshipping together. And I know some people that won't go to church if they don't feel like they look good. But we're not going to reinforce us, and we're not even necessarily going that much to reinforce others. We should be going. If it's Sunday morning worship service, what we're going to do is worship God. And if in getting to coming to worship God, we shortcut his work in our life, then we've missed it too. And I don't know why, but Sunday mornings do seem to be a lot of opportunities for growth come up Sunday mornings in families with children. Never can figure out why that would be, because during the work week it doesn't happen near as often. So anyway, don't cut it short. And then when to give, that is a big, big question. You know, God never forces a gift. In some ways, you know, we say there's no recruits in God's army. We know that he calls us, but he does have us respond. He may encourage us to respond, but he does have us to respond. He doesn't force us. And he waits for us to listen, to hear his still small voice. And so it's very important for us to pray and check out the things that we see happening in our kids' lives, and not to reward sin. Manipulation, whining, all the kinds of things that it's such a temptation. Don't reward sin with your kids. And when we see, if you look at it that way, that our response to certain behaviors, if we reward sin, it's exactly the opposite of what our goal is for our children. And I think it strengthens our perspective of the need for consistency and discipline. If you see, when you let something go and you don't confront it, that what you're really doing is rewarding sin. You're making that behavior fruitful for negative purposes in your child's life. And again, we're all growing to be more like Christ, and we need to set our own examples. We need to be willing to confess to our children our own weaknesses. A couple times my children didn't get their discipline because I was disqualified from disciplining them because of my anger. You know, something that really got my goat, and I realized that it was not appropriate for me to minister the discipline to them, and because I had to get my own self into control. All those kinds of things are obvious, and I'm sure you've all heard them many times, but I just want to reinforce it in this context. The goal that I had for my kids was that they would want to serve the Lord, and that is first shown, I believe, in serving others within the family, having responsibilities like I talked about with chores, in being hospitable to people, that guests that come in the home, being friendly at church, being supportive to people that you see that are in need and a variety of situations. That service, I think, is being a servant, is being mature in the spirit. I mean, that's what Christ was. He was the greatest servant. And it shows that you're living as unto the Lord, because you're seeking him for what he would have you to do rather than seeking for yourself. I do also believe it's very important your child understand that virtue is its own reward. That it's expensive to purchase, but it is like having an eternal bond or CD or something that, you know, matures in heaven, if you want to put it that way. The jewels and the crowns, and what do you think those things are we're throwing at Christ's feet? Those weren't things that we got without a cost. Virtue is expensive to acquire in some ways, but in the end is its own reward, I believe, here on earth, and certainly in the hereafter, as we call it at times. And especially if we realize our whole point is to develop a godly character in our child. Having them pay the expense of virtue, things that the world may see as being a waste, because frankly it would be a waste to the world, because they have a different goal. We are never going to be able to have the world's standard of living because it shouldn't be our standard of living. The things that they believe life should give to them or that they want to fill the life with. I mean, in my neighborhood, we have two wives of very successful professionals. As far as I can tell, none of their children have one chore or one responsibility other than getting what they want and doing what they want. And mom's full-time duty with her three kids is to make sure that they can have every quote-unquote opportunity. And she belongs to a church, I could tell you the church. She also has a Buddha statue in her garden. She just has missed the point because her children are ungrateful. We hear the yelling and the tone of voices between them. But she's trying to show her love by the things she gives them and the opportunities she gives them. And the children aren't happy. The children aren't respectful or honoring of her. And she's not happy. She's just missed it. And she'll periodically ask me for advice. But the second I say anything that would preclude that outward standard of living, she just doesn't think she has time to do that. And we don't have time to do what they do. That's really what it amounts to. Our children are not going to be able to have all the opportunity the world has for them, or they'll miss the opportunity that their God has for them. Like I said, I figure that if we're missing out on a few things down here, it's nothing compared with what we've got waiting for us in the extension of this life prepared for us ahead. So it is so important that your children and you both have that perspective that you're investing for the long haul, not, you know, just for the short term, and go from there. And I'd like to make the analogy of giving and receiving. The receiving is sort of the exhale, you know, inhale, exhale. And for good health, it's very important to take the deep breaths and exhale completely. If you don't exhale completely, your lungs never really cleanse. And they actually are saying that we have a lot of health problems because we have a tendency to be shallow breathers. And when you're a shallow breather, you never really get all of the pollutants out of the bottom of your lungs, and they don't all come out. So it is important that your children also learn how to receive. I know most of us have difficulty receiving compliments. There's a real tendency to say, to discredit the compliment. And I was told that's like saying, oh, you've got bad taste. You know, if someone compliments you on something and you degrade their compliment, it's like saying they have bad taste, that they shouldn't have complimented you on that because it wasn't such a good thing. It's hard to learn how to take a compliment. Like, you look nice today. No, I don't. Well, what are you saying? That I have bad taste? I think you look nice, but no, I've got bad taste. No, you have to... That's not gracious, you know, when you say that. So there is something involved in learning to receive also. But the biggest thing is that your child shouldn't expect something or just accept something. They need to receive, which means shows gratitude for things that God has provided for them or the encouragement that others give us. We need to encourage one another to be encouragers by saying thank you. That, you know, that encourages me, or I needed that boost, thank you for doing it. We need to learn how to receive, and so do our children. That's part of the reciprocity of life, and if love is relational, there is a degree of reciprocity, not necessarily in kind, you know. Your hair looks good today, yeah, your hair looks good today. I'm not, you know, saying that we're just going for an in-kind kind of thing, but there is a sense of we build our relationships by encouraging one another, which is part of the reason we're told not to forsake the fellowshipping together, because we're supposed to provoke one another to love and good works, which is my favorite scripture. It's my favorite social scripture, that we shouldn't forsake the fellowshipping together because we are supposed to provoke one another to love and good works. And provoke is a sometimes used negatively now, but in that old English King James, it means to really encourage and get behind one another, to give them love and to push them into good works. So our own needs and vulnerability are going to come out when we receive, but the thankfulness is what we need to show to those that are giving to us. That's our chance to learn gratitude and our children's chance to learn gratitude. And of course, through all of it, the most important thing is we need to look to God. As parents, we're obviously going to learn how to pray. We're going to learn discernment, and we're going to learn obedience. And all of those are skills that we're going to pass on to our children. But I think there is more spiritual growth in me through being a parent in the fact that you love your children and you want the best for them, so you are willing to sacrifice, which in many cases means sacrifice our old man in order to acquire the things of the Spirit. And so our own spiritual growth is very important, and it's obviously something to share with our kids as we grow, not to be ashamed of or, you know, try to portray ourselves as already fully matured. God is love, and we're trying to become that, and we just have to keep that eternal perspective there and give that to our children so that we can appreciate the gift of now but realize that it is not the object of our life but simply a part of our life. We don't have to just grab for all the gusto we can get now because we have a long-haul mentality because God has given us a very full-orbed life. Thank you very much.
This is a copyrighted program of Strategic Christian Services. Unauthorized reproduction is prohibited. For further information about Strategic Christian Services, visit our website at www.gostrategic.org.